You're listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. Interesting conversations about innovation, economics, culture, and history for the independent thinkers and curious minds. I'm your host, Alex Wolf.
Hi, thank you for tuning into this episode. I want to talk about today redefining our understanding of time to live a more meaningful life, a deeper life. And I think first, before I jump into it, it's important I'm addressing why I want to redefine this. Why can this be helpful? What's the point of redefining time? What can it do for us? Well, I think the first thing it can do is it can help us abuse time less. I think most of us feel like we've had somewhat of an abusive relationship with time in the sense that we might have been doing things with our time that were not, you know, that shouldn't have been prioritized or felt like a waste of time, felt like, wow, I've been given this precious life. Why have I spent so much time doing this one thing around this one person, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the first thing it can help us do. It can help us abuse time less. I think it can also give us less pressure, make us feel less pressure in the sense of trying to meet certain deadlines or make plans based on time. A lot of us might have applied some kind of timeline to our lives, and redefining time helps us not be so attached to those timelines. And the third one, which I think is the most fascinating and maybe the most helpful, depending on where you're at, is that when we redefine time, we don't become a victim of what is called technological reification, which is a mouthful, but it basically means we don't become a victim of mistaking the map for the territory. Technological reification is being mistaken about what is real and confusing reality with its technological symbol or invention. So to give you a tangible example, the reason why we talk about not mistaking the map for the territory is because the map, even though it shows us the territory, even though it guides us, it helps us navigate the territory, it's just a piece of paper that has images on it to help us navigate. But at the end of the day, the map and the territory are two different things. Now, I feel that when it comes to time, we do this very much. We mistake the clock with time itself. We mistake, you know, the calendar with time itself. And we become a victim of mistaking these things and end up kind of suffering because of it. So let's start off by talking about how much time is an invention, right? It's an invention. In my opinion, it's a form of technology, specifically when you're talking again about clocks and calendars. And we don't really think of it as an invention because it's so ingrained into our society. And we just don't think about it. It's an ancient invention. I feel like the longer an invention has been in society, the less we think of it, the more it's kind of just second nature. But the truth is that when you analyze it, it is very much an artificial construct. Now, time was invented out of the process of documenting movement in space. So if nothing moved, we would not be able to comprehend time. Movement and space in general helps us understand time, helps us give ways to measure time. Now, the dial rotation of the Earth was one of the first time scales that broke time into, you can say, these calculable cycles of light and dark. Just literally the sun orbiting the Earth orbiting the sun. And most of the earliest calendars, the historians claim they have found have been from early Sumerian cultures and early Roman cultures, but depending on what block you're on Fulton Street in Brooklyn, they're going to tell you it was Africa. but you know, it is what it is. The point is that since the beginning of human history, humans have been making calculations based on the rotation of the Earth, the orbit of the Earth around the sun. And those were calculating years and seasons. Now, months were calculated using the length of the time for the moon to orbit the Earth, approximately 29 days. But that's not super precise because it does depend on what part of the world you're in. I think that's important because part of the joke and the trippy part about time is that it's really not that precise. I have a funny video by George Carlin on my IGTV that I will post. George Carlin was a comedian and he has this really innocent, beautiful bit about time and the terms we use to describe time, things like a jiffy, a flash, and how they all create different moods. They all create different perceptions of time. And I think it's one of the most phenomenal bits I've ever seen in my life. I love it because it's super existential and it really encapsulates what I'm talking about today, which is interpreting time through whatever perception you have of it, through words, through the actual clock. One of the things he says is he prefers the emotional drama that an analog clock will give you versus a digital one. He says, I hate digital clocks because they don't have as much of the emotion. And of course, you know, I love that kind of commentary because I love showing how more life you can feel when you're sensitive to what a technology invites you to feel through its design. So an analog clock is obviously using the two hands, which are representative of the shadows of the sun used in sundials. And it's literally trying to mimic or sort of print on another mechanical canvas. You could say it's trying to imitate the shadows of the sun on the Earth, which is very intense and beautiful and natural, right? So no wonder you feel a more, like a deeper rhythm with an analog clock than you would a digital, which is just, you know what a digital clock is. So it's a great bit. Definitely check it out if you think you'd like it. And it's cute too because it's just so innocent. It's like something anyone could laugh at. Now, back to months. So yeah, I'm going through the history of time so we can have a better grasp on like, what the hell? Who invented the year? Who invented the month, right? Because that gives us, of course, better context. So again, months were calculated using the moon orbit around the Earth. And when it comes to weeks were a little bit more arbitrary and more based on geographical areas. So for example, in ancient Greece, the months consisted of three 10-day weeks. So a week for them was 10 days. Romans had an 8-day, what they called a market week, that ended in a day of rest and celebration. And so you can sort of see the skeleton of what we have as a week now. Because we still have the weekends, which are meant for rejuvenation. And the USSR in 1929 and 1932 tried to impose a 5-day week. They tried that twice, but eventually the 7-day week returned, which is so fascinating to think about because it shows how much when a society sort of grooves into a rhythm, how difficult it might be to change that, right? Can you imagine just changing how many days are in a week now? And I think with this year being the way it is, we've definitely been asking, what is time? What is a Tuesday? What is a Friday? Because the rhythm, when most of us were commuting still and having whatever that pre-COVID life, you can feel a Friday. You can feel a Sunday night. They actually had emotions because they were tied to this overall organization of work and contribution to society. So now we're going to get into the hour. And the hour was later developed in 14th century Europe when they introduced clocks on the street. And so they would have clocks on the street so the townspeople would be aware of what time it was. And this was before people had watches on their wrists, you know, or in their home. It was just to know what time it was, you would either have to just be sensitive to the sun and just have a feel, which most people had, or you can go outside and see what time it is. But it was helping bring order to these towns. And what you'll find is time is very much correlated to labor because people wanted to keep track of how much work was getting done and they wanted to measure efficiency. Now, one of the funniest stories is in 1752, the reform of the British calendar changed September 2nd of that year to be dated September 14th. And I don't know why they did that. I guess whatever. It's funny when you read about these calendar makers and clock makers, they kind of just really make it up, right? So I don't know what their reason was, but it caused a local panic of citizens to believe that 11 days had been shaved off of their lives. And there is record of people going out to the square and protesting and screaming, give us back our 11 days, give us back our 11 days, because they thought that the calendar controlled how much time they had. And it's a beautiful, beautiful example of this technological reification. It's not being sensitive to the reality of nature and confusing the application, the measurement, the instrument we put on top of the nature of reality and saying this is what is real when it's not. It's a great tool. It helps us be organized. But, you know, you're not losing time from changing September 2nd to the 14th. So that's a great example. So back to hours. Now, before hours, there were more vague systems that were used. The Anglo-Saxons had the structure of what was called morning tide, noon tide, and evening tide. And it just kind of, you know, what portion of the day you were in. But little by little, like I said, the hours started to be more adopted more in 14th century Europe. The next that's up is minutes. Now, minutes are kind of intense. They're so intense, honestly, if you ask me, because for most of human history, they were not necessary. People did not think about minutes. Minutes didn't start to matter until the Industrial Revolution, and guess what? Of course, to calculate labor and efficiency. Once these systems, these assembly lines, these factories started to become more sophisticated, you know, time is money. Every minute literally counted, and they needed a way to scale. The Industrial Revolution is all about scale. It's all about, you know, how much can we get done in an hour, and how much do we need to invest in which areas to make that grow. So even today, the minute isn't precise enough as far as what we use to calculate, because once computing technology came along, such as the internet and things like space exploration, these things made mathematicians and scientists and inventors find a need for seconds and milliseconds and nanoseconds, like these really intense little microscopic bits of time that don't exist naturally. They're just the way we break it apart so we can better measure things. And that's just very, very important because, again, a minute in itself is pretty intense. It's an intense way of measuring time. But once you start talking about seconds and milliseconds, you see how far the fascination for calculating time has gone. And one of the ironies, and I talk about this in my presentation about why millennials feel so unaligned with their age, because I'm so fascinated about how we perceive time. And I think the whole point of that presentation was to present why I think so many millennials are freaked out about aging, why they don't feel as adult as they thought they would feel. And I know this is not for everybody, but the point was this is general mainstream current of agreement that millennials feel this way. And one of the trippiest things that I was learning as I was putting it together was that, you know, if you say, for example, if you're waiting for the train in New York, we say before there were, now they have timers where they'll tell you, oh, train is coming in 2 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever. But back in the day, we would just, the way, quote unquote, you could tell the real New Yorkers from the people who just got here was the real New Yorkers would check for the train. They would look down the tunnel. And I think the story I shared was that one time someone who wasn't from here saw me and my friend doing that. And he was like, what are you doing? That's not going to make the train come any faster. And we both turned around and at the same time, unplanned, said, yes, it does. And it's a funny story because there are things that you can do. There are ways that you can add things to your stimuli, or I guess incorporate stimuli, that will change how quickly or how slowly things feel. For example, a watch pot never boils. Time is flying when you're having fun. And the point is, like, minutes and hours and these things, they're helpful, but in the span of like everyday life, it doesn't, what's really measuring it is like your experience. Was this fun? Was this hell? You know, sitting in 5 minutes of pain feels way slower than sitting in 5 minutes of pleasure. It feels like the 5 minutes of pleasure dissolves, where it feels like the pain is taking a longer time. And that's because depending on the type of stimuli you're feeling will change your perception of time. Which, of course, I added into the theory of, because we had so much stimulation, more stimulation than any human species before, because of our technology, our childhood went really fast, and all the mediums of entertainment that we use changed really fast. And so all these things were so stimulating that, boom, that's why a lot of us feel unaligned. There's other parts to it, but that was like one of the introductory themes. And it's relevant to this topic because, you know, yeah, a scientist can tell you, oh, 5 minutes is, you know, 60 seconds times five. But is it? What's making me, at the end of the day, time is what you perceive it to be. So yes, you can use the scientific method as a way to agree with others, but you as an individual, you're experiencing time completely different. You know what I mean? Where did the day go? Or wow, Friday came fast, or this week is taking forever. That's all just dependent on what you're doing in your daily life. You know what I mean? So that's just so powerful because 5 minutes is not really 5 minutes. It is it's an abstraction. It's a way to time something externally, but internally it's not necessarily going to be perceived that way. So why am I talking about this? I think partly because when we start talking about modern pop psychology and modern, the well-being movement of everybody trying to like meditate and everybody buying the power of now and everybody trying to be more present, there's a lot of talk about presence. There's a lot of talk about this power of now and how we should live in the present and how now, like, if you want to be enlightened, then you need to figure out this whole now thing, basically. And that's why I wanted to talk about time and the history of time, because now is a time. And so yeah, there's all these like kind of vague, you know, suggestions that if you happen to feel the now, then you'll be good. Like you'll have reached some kind of Buddhist enlightenment. And I feel like, what does this really mean, living in the present? You know, what does that really mean? It sounds nice, but I feel like a lot of people throw it around and they don't really talk about how to apply that to life in a way that feels real and responsible and like not impulsive. Because the way I realistically, and I don't know, maybe you've had different experiences, but the way I realistically see people saying, oh, I'm going to live in the present, is like impulsive decisions that skew on the side of toxicity, or like, you know, life is short, let me just call this fuck boy, or like, you know, that I don't, that is not what is meant by living in the present, or kind of disregarding plans, not planning because life is short and live in the present. I think that's part of it. But when it comes to this actual application of living in the quote-unquote now, I think it's less about throwing caution to the wind. I think it's less about making decisions that feel good now. They're less about decisions of instant gratification. That's how I see it being applied. Well, I'm living in the now. They're seeking some kind of instant gratification, and generally speaking, and that's not, I think, what the people who want to feel this enlightenment, that's not really what they're looking for. They really want to feel like good. They really want to feel connected to life, and they want to feel really alive. And feeling alive is more than just getting instant gratification. Of course, I'm over here talking about the importance of being sensitive. I'm talking about adding boredom to your life, right? I don't think you can do that by searching and seeking for more and more like crazy things to happen. So where do I think it starts when it comes to redefining time and redefining how to live in the now? Well, you have to stop conceptualizing the present as a millisecond or like a nanosecond. That is why I was talking about this reification and this and these clocks and these inventions, because we perceive now as like this whipping moment, this moment that's going from the past to the future, and you have to like really concentrate really hard and try to catch that like nanosecond, and then the nanosecond after that. And we time our meditations, and you know, we think we're doing something by trying to hold on to this conceptualized abstraction. It's like you might as well hold on to the letter A. You know, it's not real. This nanosecond is an idea. It's a way scientists measure time and space and shit, or time like in the body or whatever kind of microscopic scale they're using. But the present is not a moment. A moment is a word used to describe a theoretical construct. Okay? We cannot mistake the map for the territory. The present does not move in a line. It's not something that's sitting between the past and the future. And it is not something that is made up of super small increments that you have to try to catch. Okay? When we perceive it like that, meditation is hell. When we perceive it like that, living in the present can look like a hot ass mess. When we perceive it like that, we are missing out on a different way of experiencing the present moment. So the way I see it is the present is a process that evaporates like steam. And here's what I mean. Existence is inherently ephemeral, okay? It is inherently, which means by nature, ephemeral. Ephemeral is temporary, moving, changing. Think about the wind. Think about just anything that just kind of floats on by. The clouds are very ephemeral. Now, The wind and the clouds, those are things you can see. Those are things you can feel. But the reality is, you know, this is happening to everything. The thing about your fruit ripening on the counter, the bananas, the avocados, the more natural something is, the more perishable it is. I know all my foodies understand this because you understand that it's not just about ingredients. It's literally about the freshness of the ingredients. It doesn't matter if you have everything you need. The time is aging these things and literally taking away their flavor, or it's missing that ripe stage. Italian food, what I always say is Italian food is not complicated. It's so good because it's so damn fresh. And I'm sure it's like that with, if you're from another country, you know, America is really one of the top countries that we just, freshness is like not a thing. I went to an island that I should have remain nameless. It wasn't a Caribbean island, I'll say that. But it was mostly, I think they said 80% of the food was imported. And by the second day I was there, I really started to feel, I can't really describe it. I'll try my best. It was like, it wasn't sick, but it was just like, I felt like the blood in my body wasn't moving. Like, I just felt like, ugh, like something was really missing. And I realized that it was because most of the food, even at the fancy restaurants, because of the geographical location of this island, it wasn't abundant in crops and farms. So most of the shit was frozen stuff that they were reheating. And me being, you know, bougie, I'm like, like, get this frozen, you know, appetizer shit out of my face. Not that I think frozen food is okay, but it was because it was like a whole day and a half of it straight. With, like, for me, I'm just like, give me a freaking grape. Give me a goddamn tomato. And one that isn't like super hard, or like I can tell was picked too early. Because I felt like I couldn't. I felt like, again, like the blood in my body wasn't moving, or like the wind, my breath wasn't fresh. And like a long time ago, I got a yoga teacher's accreditation, and what they teach you in yoga, I love yoga, it's great. It's great practice. What they teach you is just how, like, stretching your body and moving in all these ways, it in a way like washes, quote unquote, washes your blood by giving your blood cells oxygen, which rejuvenate your blood cells, which like oxygenate, hopefully I said that right, your blood cells. And the whole point of yoga, you know, the movement yoga, is you stretch and then you breathe into your hips, or you breathe into your back. And you, I mean, I feel like I can feel the oxygen going into these areas, and it's like, ugh, it's like a spa happening internally from the inside out. And you'll notice that when you don't eat fresh foods, you know, it's giving you that feeling of that stagnation. So when you don't move your body, your blood isn't, you know, getting the same oxygen. So it feels kind of stale. That's the best way I could describe it. It's not a scientific way of describing it, but I'm just going off of like sensation and experience. So why am I saying all this? I'm saying this because the more natural something is, the more perishable it is, because existence is inherently ephemeral. You are ephemeral. Whatever is in front of you is ephemeral. I don't care if it's a flower. I don't care if it's a brick. That thing ain't gonna be here forever. And one of my favorite quotes from Alan Watts, he says, the more a thing tends to be permanent, the more it tends to be lifeless. So I want you to hear that and think about the loves in your life. I want you to hear that and think about the memories in your life, the realness of certain moments. You know, think about music. Music evaporates like steam. Each tone, each note is, after it's, you know, struck, after it's whatever expressed, it just, it goes back into the silence. The sound wave is made, and then it goes woo, woo, woo back until it fades into silence. Everything is doing that. Everything is woo-wooing at a certain rate. Now, some of it we can't see with our naked eye. Some of it we can hear instead of see. Some of it we can see. But the point is, all of this shit is doing that. Now, back to this perfection thing. Perfect things are a sign of death. Perfect things are a sign that there's no life in it. It's funny, the book I was reading of Alan Watts' Wisdom About Insecurity was talking about how even our skin, when we try to manipulate our bodies through cosmetic surgeries, which again, like, he's talking about this shit in like the 50s. He's like, you know, you can't do that without either hardening your body or losing sensitivity in your body. And I'm just like, oh my God. And it's not a judgment against cosmetic surgery. It's just like real facts. Like, the more you might try to make it look young, but the more you try to make it look young when it isn't, the less feeling it will have. Meaning, like, you won't feel it. You won't feel something touching your skin if it has been manipulated, or someone else might touch it and they will feel that it's not real or it's not natural. And I'm just like, oh my God. So, like, isn't that a metaphor? Isn't that such a beautiful lesson about nature? It's just like, there's this inherent sensitivity and ephemerality, and that the less of that you see, the more manipulated of a perfection that we try to aim for, the less alive something is. You think about robotics, you think about machines, you think about soulless algorithms. They don't have feelings. They are more quote unquote permanent, and they are more and more lifeless. You watch those movies. I was watching Mandalorian. They have those scary ass androids that can't feel, and they just kill, right? It's just, there's no room for like the robot who has been programmed to kill to be like, oh, this is a cute little, you know, thing. Let me like feel some type of emotion. No, they can't. It's lifeless. So back to present and future. Past, present, future. There is no past or future to experience directly. They are concepts. I know you probably, if you've dabbled into this Power of Now stuff, you've heard that before. What that really means is that if you are thinking about the future or the past, you're not in the future or the past. You are thinking of it in the present, because you can only do it in the present because that's all there is, right? Future and past are less real than you think. They are not places. They are memories and predictions. The past is just memories thought about in the present. The future are just predictions thought about in the present. But I don't care if you put on a headset and go back to 1959. You are not in the past. I don't care if you close your eyes and you think about that fantastic weekend in Jamaica doing God knows what. You ain't there. You're in the present, and you're using your memories to try to remember, right? And it's funny because you think about the word remember, and you think about the etymology of these words of, you know, Alan Watts. I don't know if I agree with this, but he says something like, if you're obsessed with a memory, it's because it was a present moment you didn't digest fully. So you have to go back and try to redigest it, meaning like you weren't really there. But I don't know. I feel like I've been really present in moments, and I still like to have memory of them. But I get what he's saying. I think, you know, it can be a sickness that you meet people and all they're thinking about is the past, or you meet people and all they're thinking about is the future. And we say, oh, you're stuck in the past, or you're stuck in the future, which theoretically, you know what I mean? They are, but literally they're in the present. And that's another very important distinction to make when we're using these words, when we're trying not to mistake the map for the territory, that everything is the present. The future is a concept. It is made of predictions. We've gotten really good. You know, science and math has made us really good at predictions, but honey, we ain't never gonna be perfect. And that's out of our control. The past is the past. I love memory, because we use technology to create memory, meaning photography and audio and all these things. Like, I was listening to James Brown on the radio. I'm like, thank God. Y'all motherfuckers invented these recording technologies because you were able to have a technological extension of this particular memory. So it doesn't just have to live in our grandmama's mind when they were young and hot and at the concert. But, you know, we have these technological artifacts that encapsulates these times, these times and moments. And I often think about that when I listen to my favorite Dead artists and things. I'm like, thank God you were in the booth. Thank God someone pushed you in there and made you create this magic, because now we can immortalize this memory. But the point is, you know, I can only listen to it in the present. So I don't have beef with the past. I don't have beef with the present. I don't got beef with nothing. Speaking of how quickly food spoils, meat, I mean, do you understand that most of the shit that we need to live can't even be out for a few hours without it, like, really damaging us? You ever think about that? Like, wow, you know, it looks like everything is so solid and permanent, and it's not. There are things that literally just sitting out in the open air will kill you if you eat it, and you have to pay attention to how perishable something is. It really shows you something. It's really teaching you, you know, how precious it is, how rare it is, you know. Like, yeah, meat is a very sophisticated process to get it from the actual animal to your plate. Like, it's a very perishable, gentle, easy to go situation. You look at flowers, you look at these things, how beautiful, the flower industry, love to learn about it, the economics of that, because it's economics of perishability, but just not just perishability, but beauty and perishability. Needing to, wanting to gift flowers because they are what? Because they're ugly? Because they're stupid? No, because they are beautiful. What's the demand? The demand is, I have someone I want to please and appreciate with flowers. Okay, I'm the flower guy, so take, you know, give me your money. And then the beauty of that person giving you the flowers is that they're giving you freshness. They're giving you earth's flowers, these things that really immediately start to, you know, little by little perish right in front of your eyes, and the beauty fades literally in front of your eyes. And it's like, that's life. That's time. That's time. More than it's a nanosecond. So, okay. I hope you understand what I'm saying about this evaporation thing. It's not a literal evaporation. It's just waves radiating. It's waves moving through space all at different speeds. So everything around you, your body, your hand in a way is evaporating via these vibrational waves. It's echoing. It's echoing its molecular structure in this field of behavior that is existence. And it's slowly radiating through space at a speed that you cannot see with your naked eye. But it's extending out. That's the present. It's not a nanosecond. It's a vibrational going out and out and out. It's coming out of everything. It's in the music, it's in the buzz, it's in the head, it's everything, okay? So you don't got to catch it. You don't have to catch it. You don't have to catch a millisecond. You're in it. You are it. And that's the whole beauty. That's what everyone, you know, that's what all Alan Watts and all these, like, Taoists, you are it. Ancient Hindu, there's nothing to attain. That's why they feel like it's a hoax when someone's like, oh, well, if you want to be enlightened, you know, sit down for 5 minutes. And that's, somebody asked me, oh, I want you to go deeper into why I don't sit for meditation. That is why. Does that make sense? Because I don't have anything against meditation, but you can just through your perception, just the way you look at the world, you can see that you can't escape the present moment. If you want to use meditation to be calm, to have a few moments of silence, go at it. I don't care. My whole thing is, like, I hate when I see people who feel like they have to, like, pass this test of enlightenment or jump through hoops, and, you know, because that's that's just the ego in disguise. What did I say about the ego? It's a climber. It wants to say, oh, want to come up here? Oh, jump higher. Oh, do this. Oh, and that never appealed to me when it came to how I want to experience the depth of my life or my quote-unquote spirituality or whatever. I didn't want to do that shit. I was like, it's not adding up for me. I don't know. I just posted the quote I wrote about Picasso. I said, Picasso can do all these photorealistic paintings at like 12, like fucking shit, that'll freak you out. Like, how did he do this? But towards the end of his life, he started doing all this weird, abstract, crazy shit. And the message for that to me was that to get to where I am, you don't necessarily have to do what I did, because freedom is instant. It's not this thing you have to climb. Some people feel like they have to climb. Some people feel like they have to go to India or meditate for, you know, however long, or that's what they need to feel. But you don't need it, because people, you know, this is the taboo. There's people who just, they need to kind of, they need to feel like they've earned it, earned enlightenment. But Soul, the movie everyone's talking about, everybody's like, oh, Alex, you gotta watch Soul. Very cute. So cute. So nice to see a Disney movie about a regular, like, black guy just being humanized. Nothing to do with his race, just regular guy living his life. Anybody can identify. That's what we need to see more of. Humanized pictures in the media of black men specifically. And what was the whole point? I'm not gonna spoil it if you didn't see it, but there's a message of, you don't have to earn this shit. You don't have to earn, like, appreciating, enjoying life. You can literally start right now. Not even after you get off the pie. Either. Right now. And that's my whole thing. Like, everyone's like, oh, Alex, what are you trying to do? Like, what's your mission? My mission is to get people fascinated about the world they live in through the lens of these types of conversations about technology and innovation and economics. We're here, y'all. This is the miracle. That's all, like, you know, and it's like, people think tech philosophy, it's obviously not just about tech. It's about, what I'm really trying to say is, like, too much of us, in my opinion, the reason why we have these high rates of depression, suicide, and anxiety is because a lot of us are under the spell of technological reification, meaning that we are mistaking the map for the territory. That half of us are depressed over an illusion, because they're perceiving the world through the grid and not, they're perceiving the world through the net when the world is really the water. You know those big nets that people cast over the ocean to collect fish? That is society. That is the, remember I was talking about the matrix, the lines? It's just a helper. It's just to collect some fish. It's not what it is. Don't go screaming, talking about, I need my 11 days back because someone changed the calendar. That's what I look around. I'm like, oh my God. On Twitter, oh my God. Like, what are you freaking out about? Like, you are so attached to this illusion of security that one thing has changed and you're that thrown off. Yeah, it's an illusion. This security is an illusion. We are in a ball and floating in outer space. If you, you know, everything is moving. Some people don't want to hear that, and that's fine. But the people who can find the value in this mystery, comforting by the mystery, there's two types of people. There's people who are comforted by mystery, and there's people who are freaked out by it. I became comforted by mystery because I did not enjoy being humiliated by my expectations. And I just, this shit was not working for me. I've said that. Meaning, like, mainstream society, the mainstream perception of, like, Western ideology and trying to impose your will on the world and thinking, oh, I'm a human and I know how to set this world right. What are you talking? The world made me. I came out of this thing. How am I going to sit here and say, oh, I know this and I know that? Especially when our track record is trash. Y'all killing all types of fish and animals and trees. I don't trust none of y'all. I'm like, Mother Nature seems to know. That's just me. Anyway, and it's nature. I'm not just all about nature, because the beauty is that you can co-create with the earth, and it's called technology. But the trick is, you can't create the technology thinking you are separate from the earth and expect to have a wonderful time here. You will find more harmony by creating technology as a co-creation with the world, and not a way to make it submissive, not a way to break it like a horse. That is all Western ideology of like, oh, well, we have to make the world submit to our will. I'm sorry, have you never seen a tornado? Have you never seen a tidal wave? Like, you really think you got this shit under control? All right, B. Anyway, so yeah, everything around you is vibrating. We know this, we've heard this, but hopefully you can see that perceiving the present moment as this vibration, you get rid of that line image. You get rid of this past, present, future image. Images really, really control our perception of the world. I don't mean photographs. I'm talking about abstract images. Like, the way you visualize a concept in your head controls how you see everything. So if you're seeing time as a nanosecond, or I'm sorry, if you're seeing the present as a nanosecond that you got to just close your eyes real tight and try to catch, yeah, you're going to have a shitty time. If you perceive it as vibrational waves echoing out into space, which it is, on various wavelengths, various frequencies, then you're like, oh, there's less of this like pressure of like, got to catch it. There's nothing to catch. You're just doing it here. Okay. All right. So why does this perception of time add more depth to our life? Just kind of recapping of what this perception can do for us. It doesn't make us a victim of tech reification. We don't mistake the map for the territory. And we can better embrace the natural phenomenon of existence, its natural expression. Because when we get hung up on perceiving nature just through the technological or scientific instruments we've developed, or honestly, even academic or philosophical theories, because that's the thing, it's not just physical objects that confuse us, it's abstract theories and concepts that can influence how we perceive. So when we get hung up on perceiving nature just through these tech or scientific instruments or academic or philosophical theories, and we use those to measure everything, we use those to measure life and calculate every little damn thing we don't need to calculate, as far as, it's unnecessary if you want to live a meaningful life. It's cool if you want to do it, but you don't need to track every nanosecond of everything to be happy. When we stop doing that, or when we do that, I'm sorry, we miss out on seeing the beauty of the true mystery behind all these things, behind life. We get too scientific. We lose the romance. You know, wonder. Wonder is very important. Modern tech philosophy doesn't want you to wonder at all. Hell no, does not want you to wonder. It wants you to have an answer. Predict it, calculate it, measure it, throw it up, show us. It does not leave space for like, I wonder what this is. I wonder what stars really are. I wonder what love is. And asking not because you want an answer, just dwelling in the wonder. Wow. Wonder's a great feeling. Oh, what is that quote? I'm going to find the quote. The quote says something like, after searching for everything, wonder is the last place to be. I'm going to find the direct quote. But the point of that is like, all these aspirations, all these ambitions, even after you achieve them, the most fulfilling place to dwell after all your achievements have been unlocked, after you've searched the answer for the answer through scientific, religious, anything, trying to find the answer. You'll see the real beauty is not in the answer at all. It's in the wonder. It's in not knowing. It's okay to not know. It adds a lot of meaning to our life to not analyze every damn thing. If you turn love into biochemical reactions in the body or for hormonal blah blah blah, like, really? Ew. You know what I mean? Or if you try to turn the marvel of the stars as like floating gas in the space, our calculations sound like meh, meh, meh. I'm not saying throw those scientific definitions in garbage. I'm saying that is saying it's a nanosecond. That's what it is. It's saying it's a millisecond. It's one way. It's a scientific way of saying what it is. But you as a receptor, you as a human being, it's not just these scientific terms. You don't experience it as, you know, just gaslight in the air. You see something. It's beautiful. It's mysterious. It's insane. It's some kind of guidance. It's been used as like guidance and navigation for your ancestors. Like, I don't know. That's beautiful. The more you try to smash something, the more you try to perfect something or try to make something permanent, the more lifeless it becomes. So hope you enjoyed this. Thank you for tuning in. Please send me an email, a tweet, a message. Say hello. Very, very grateful to have you be a listener. Send this to someone you think would enjoy it, and have a great day. All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And if you aren't already, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more resources on innovation, economics, and culture, visit alexwolf.co/newsletter and sign up for my email list. Thanks.